Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon on the homepage or the iTunes icon and listen from there. Today I have with me an amazing Canadian. His name is Mel Hertig. He is the writer of 7 books, and today we will talk about his new publication, The Truth About Canada, and I would say it is a must-read for every Canadian. Mel Hertig is a true patriot. He is the legendary Edmonton bookseller, publisher, who created the Canadian Encyclopedia. He is the founder of the Council of Canadians and the National Party of Canada. He became a political activist and then an author in 1991 with his huge bestseller, The Betrayal of Canada. He is also the author of Pay the Rent or Feed the Kids, The Vanishing Country, and Rushing to Armageddon. He is a member of the Order of Canada and has received many honorary degrees and honors. He lives in Vancouver. Well, Mel Hertig, I want to welcome you to Authors Audio. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much, Jake.
You know, you are an amazing man. I've been looking through your book here, and it is just jam-packed full of information that most Canadians should know, but they don't know. I didn't know a lot of the things that you bring up in the book comparing our country of Canada to a lot of other countries. And this is part of what you do in the book to show where we are compared to the rest of the world. And it's astounding how far down we are in some areas.
Well, there are two basic comparisons in the book. One is, as you say, how does Canada stand compared to other countries in the world in so many important areas such as healthcare and poverty and social programs and peacekeeping, et cetera, et cetera. And how do we compare to the way we used to be? And one of the major theses of the book is the way that our country has deteriorated in so many ways over the last quarter century. Under the governments of Brian Mulroney, Jean Chrétien, Paul Martin, and Stephen Harper.
This whole business of globalization has hurt a lot of countries because actually a lot of countries are not being run by their governments, but they're run by the corporations that more or less tell the government what they want them to do. Isn't that right?
That's partially the case, but it's also partially that under globalization, one of the things that has occurred has been a race to the bottom. Mm-hmm. As one country cuts corporate income tax rates, another country says, oh, we better cut our rates even more, and then the next one cuts theirs even more, and soon governments do not have the revenue stream that they need to provide the social services that are normal for, or had been normal for, most countries.
Yes. Well, we're talking, and I think it's important for our listeners to know, is that we're talking approximately the middle of October in 2008, and I wanted to get maybe just a brief take that you may have on this whole world financial mess that we're in. I mean, how prepared is Canada to go through this?
Jake, we were at a dinner party with some of our best friends about 3 months ago, and I told them, get out of the stock market as soon as you can. And they said, why mm-hmm. would you say that? And I said, pretty simple. The whole economic system as it stands right now is due for a major collapse. There's no way that the leading country in the world in terms of the world's economy can continue to sustain the kind of terrible economic record that it has had for the last 8 years in yeah. terms of the current account deficit, in terms of the trade deficit, in terms of the whole accumulation of debt, and the continuing for certain accumulation of annual deficits. You know, the American deficit this year, I think, is going to be $459 billion, which is a staggering sum. And the U.S. Yes. deficit itself, or debt itself, is multi-trillions of dollars. And there's no possible way that the world's leading economy can continue the way it's been going under the government of George Bush and other globalization. And you can't continue to reduce taxes for the wealthy and corporate taxes and then continue to manage to pay for the huge costs of going to war in Iraq and Afghanistan and building up your military, as Americans have done, without going bankrupt. And that's one of the things that has happened, not to mention the basic problem that has been the catalyst to this current crisis, which has clearly been the amazingly brilliant move by the George Bush government to deregulate. And capitalism is fine
yeah.
as long as it's properly regulated in the interests of the people and not in the interests of just the top 1% of the population, which is, in effect, if you study the distribution of income in both the United States and Canada, they're the people that have benefited from the economic policies of the last generation. You know, I'll give you one stat about Canada that just, I mean, it boggles my mind. I hope it'll boggle your mind too. The gap between the rich and the poor in Canada is greater now than it has been at any time in the last 30 years. And it's getting bigger and bigger every year. In Canada, the top 5.7% of the population, incredibly, owns 97% of all family wealth in this country. Or put another way, the bottom 94% of us, we get to own the grand total of 3% of family wealth in this country. Well, that is not the way capitalism is supposed to work. That's the way their society for the wealthy develops, and it's been the case in both the United States and in Canada for many, many years now. In the list of countries, Canada is now 40th in terms of income inequality when you measure the income of the top 10% and compare it to the income of the lowest 10%.
Yes, you make several quotes from the OECD in comparable data with 30 other countries, and you get into the various levels that we are on now compared with these 30 countries, which also includes the U.S., by the way, I believe.
Of course it does.
It's just astounding. You know, 21 of the 30 countries in the OECD have lower poverty rates than Canada.
Yes, isn't that astonishing? And it's even more astonishing, Jake, when you consider the fact that Canada has the ninth highest gross domestic product in the world, and we're 22nd in terms of poverty. And we're 25th of the 30 OECD countries in terms of social spending. You know, you would think a country with a lot of poverty would have a fair amount of social spending. We're 25th out of 30 countries, which says a heck of a lot about the quality and the concerns and the priorities of our politicians, not to mention our media in this country.
There's so many areas that come up in your book, and we're only going to be able to get maybe to a few of them, but the unemployment insurance, which is now called, it's changed its name to the unemployment what?
It's ridiculously changed its name to employment insurance, which is an incredibly stupid title.
In 1980, 86% of people that were employed could receive or qualify to receive unemployment. Now, the people that are out of work that would qualify to receive the employment insurance, as they call it, is down to 40%.
Yeah, in other words, much less than half of what it was in 1980. In addition to that, if you look at the unemployment insurance benefits that people who are unemployed receive, compared to other OECD countries, we're 22nd among the 30 countries in terms of replacing the lost earnings for the unemployed.
From the days of Tommy Douglas, the days of the Pearson government, were very conscious of social programs. Tommy Douglas really started the whole concept of our universal health care, didn't he?
Tommy Douglas did indeed that, and the governments of Lester Pearson and Paul Martin's father and others were very socially conscious. We've now gone exactly in the opposite direction in the last few years, and we are less and less concerned about how society should try to help the underprivileged, and I think that's a terrible shame.
Do you see this trend throughout the world, or is this something that's happening more and more?
What is happening more and more is that this lack of regard for the underprivileged is becoming more and more prevalent in Canada and the United States, and not so in Western Europe. It's primarily something that has occurred in North America.
I like to call what's happening over in Canada and the U.S., and especially the U.S., of course, is a style of capitalism. I call it predatory capitalism, because it is like Walmart goes into a town and tells them how great everything's going to be, and they drop the prices and all the things that everybody else is selling in the town. They put them out of business, and then they have complete control over whatever they want to charge for their goods once those other people, the competition is gone. So we're finding more and more of this, these large corporations, of course, and they're making their materials are being made in China or other countries like that.
Well, that's true, and not only that, despite all their whining and their complaints, which they're wonderful at in Canada in particular, the corporate profits have just increased amazingly. Corporate profits in 1992, for instance, were roughly 4.7% of gross domestic product. In 2007, they were over 15% of gross domestic product. So roughly three times as much. And despite what you hear from the Conference Board of Canada and the CD Howe Institute and the Canadian Council of Chief Executives and the Fraser Institute and all of these big right-wing organizations in Canada, corporate profits in Canada, the percentage of gross domestic product, have been higher in Canada than in the U.S. for 16 of the last 24 years. And yet, incredibly, business investment in new machinery and equipment, which is how you want to try to stay competitive and how you want to make sure that your young people have jobs in the future, have dropped down to 18th of 30 countries in terms of new business development and machinery and equipment. And you hear the complaints out of the National Post and the Globe and Mail business section report on business that our competitiveness is incredibly poor, which is true, but research and development by industry in Canada as a percentage of gross domestic product in the 30 OECD countries, we're 25th. Well, how the heck can you be competitive when you don't do research and development?
Well, you also mentioned patents, which it was unbelievable to realize that the patents per million people that are being requested to the patent office, like we're down at the bottom of the 30 countries in the OECD.
absolutely, we're at the very bottom. And guess which industry is at the bottom of all those companies? The industry that's been making more money than they ever dreamed of in the past, the oil and gas industry, they devote the grand total of 0.36% to research and development of their corporate revenues, which is absolutely scandalous. And, of course, most of those big companies are foreign companies. And do you think they're too interested in doing R&D in this country? Well, you're a dreamer if you think that's the case.
Well, there's another factor and another point that you bring up well in your book, and that is the high concentration of media ownership in newspapers, television, and so on, not only in Canada, but in North America in general. So we're getting a very few points of view from this kind of arrangement, aren't we?
The concentration is high, and of course it's in the hands of, as you said, a very small number of people. People ask me, Mel, what is the most important chapters in your book? And I think they're all important, but two of the most important is one is the chapter on the media, and the other is the chapter on the malfunction of the democratic system in this country, where the will of the people is not properly reflected in the outcomes of elections. So let's deal first of all with the media. There's no other Western democracy that I'm aware of that has the degree of corporate ownership in the hands of such a small group of people as we do in Canada. Now, there's nothing wrong with conservatives owning television stations and radio stations, but when you get virtually all of the media owned by people who are falling off the right edge of the globe, you get a problem where the people are not getting the news. It's one of the reasons I wrote my book, The Truth About Canada, is because what happened, Jake, was very simple. I'm such an interesting person that I go first thing in the morning to the website of Statistics Canada and read what is called The Daily. And The Daily comes out Monday to Friday. And then I would see the next morning either what I read that I thought was important wasn't in the papers, or it was in there in a distorted manner, or was buried in the back of the paper in the comic book sections. And time after time, I got examples of things that happened that are really important in this country that simply were not properly reported in the press. I'm just going to give you, Jake, one quick example. For the interest of you and your audience, and this is an example that is not in my book because it came to me too late as the type was already being set, but a man named Philip Mathias is one of the best investigative reporters in the history of this country, and he worked on a story for quite some time, and he took it eventually, when he was satisfied with it, to the editors of his newspaper, the National Post, and the editor said, "Thank you very much, Philip, and we'll get back to you the next day." The next day, they said to him, "I'm sorry, but we've come to the conclusion that this is not a story that would be of interest to Canadians." What was the story, Jake? The story was the story of Karl-Heinz Schreiber meeting in hotel rooms with Brian Mulroney and handing over envelopes with $1,000 bills to the Prime Minister. And this would not be in the interest of Canadians, if you can imagine. I mean, that's symptomatic of one of the things that's happened to the media of this country, is that too often in the past, the media has reflected the priorities and the concerns and the values of people like Conrad Black and Izzy Asper and et cetera, and Mr. Rogers as well. And by the way, in other countries, not only do we have the problem here of the excessive corporate ownership of the media by a few people, but we've also got excessive cross-ownership whereby television and radio and newspapers are owned by the same people. So you get the situations that exist in Vancouver and Saskatchewan and New Brunswick, for example, where the same people own most of the media.
They are, in fact, in a position to manufacture a world for you through their through their power in advertising and news to basically, you know, paint a picture for you that they want, and that's what they do. And
that is exactly true, and that's why I say that the media chapter of my book is one of the two most important. The other is the chapter on democracy.
I know that you mentioned that the Harper government wants to increase the spending from $25 billion for the military now and 2012 to $35 billion. Has anybody ever told you to any kind of satisfaction exactly why we are in Afghanistan?
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of people who will tell you why they think we're in Afghanistan. By the way, the new figure just came out today, I think it was, that we've already spent almost $19 billion on Afghanistan, and we're headed to spending a lot more in the future. The conventional wisdom is that we're doing our best to fight off future terrorism and to democratize the country and et cetera, et cetera. But the answer is, ever since we've been in there for many years, 7 years, is it? I've forgotten. Yeah, the Taliban are stronger now than they have been for many, many years. And the support for any kind of NATO involvement is lower now than it has been for many, many years. And the ability to win things militarily, as the British general said the other day, is impossible. We're just not, this is a war that cannot be won militarily. Now, there's all kinds of wonderful organizations, such as UNICEF, for example, that's doing great work in Afghanistan, and God bless them. But I don't think we're doing the right thing in Afghanistan. I think we could do a lot better by going into a major United Nations program and working very hard with the United Nations to build infrastructure and to do our best to see that young women get a chance to go to school and et cetera, et cetera. But the military operations at the present time, I think, are not accomplishing, unfortunately, because of the wonderful young men that we've lost over there, what we wanted to have happen.
Yes, we have lost a lot of wonderful young men. And a little bird told me one time, and I did some research online, and I found out, Mel, that, you know, it's very interesting. They really want to put natural gas and oil pipelines through Afghanistan, coming from the Caspian region, and that this was one of the things that someone said was really one of the real reasons why we're there.
I think every reason to believe that that is true, and it's no longer a secret now, and it's no longer a secret either that it was Dick Cheney who initiated this sort of intervention. But the problem we have now is we've had this militaristic Bush government and the Harper government that jumped in very quickly. You know, one of the reasons the Martin government, which was the ones that put us into Afghanistan, put us there, was because they were doing a mea culpa to George W. Bush for not getting involved in the American missile defense plans. Just while we are speaking about that, if I may, I wrote a book on the subject, which was called Rushing to Armageddon, and I can tell you right now, after working for a couple of years on this book and dealing with the best minds in the United States and in Great Britain and in Canada on this subject, there is no way in the world that the multi-billion dollar American missile defense system can work. It cannot work. It hasn't worked in the past, and it will not work in the future. So why are the Americans pursuing this? Pretty simple, because it's essentially not about missile defense, but it's essentially about developing a system which is capable of launching missiles in the future.
The Security and Prosperity Partnership, and of course NAFTA before that, the government is not making any real, even though there's a website, but the government of Canada is not, there's no whisper at all about why they've been talking to the United States and Mexico about this particular plan, which I understand from other people is really a plan to make united the countries of Canada, United States and Mexico in a political way and also in a monetary way. Have you heard this?
Well, Jake, in my book, the conclusion of the book warns about this in some detail.
Yes.
Some time ago in the fall of the year before, I got my hands on some documents relating to secret meetings that were going on at the Banff Springs Hotel in Banff, Alberta. And the documents showed the very top senior American officials, including ex-Secretary of State George Shultz and all kinds of cabinet ministers, and the same thing from Canada, leading Canadians such as former ambassadors to the United States, and Peter Lougheed, the former Premier of Alberta, were getting together secretly. They hired a public relations firm in Ottawa to help them keep it secret. They instructed everybody, don't talk to the press. And they were there, and I got my hands on the agenda as well as the attendees. And they were there for the purpose of building, actually integrating Canada much further into the United States than it is already. And do understand that we're more integrated with the United States today than most countries in Western Europe are integrated with each other. And just to go back to the question of the media in this country, when I got my hands on those detailed documents with page after page after page of important names of Canadians and Americans, I distributed it to the press. I gave it to Peter Newman, and Peter Newman said, I tried to get my hands on further information, and the people that I normally trusted, and they trusted me, wouldn't say a word. I gave it to Globe and Mail and the National Post, CBC, CTV, and Global, and it disappeared. They weren't interested in all these important people getting together, as they subsequently did in Montebello and in the United States, and most recently, within the last month or so, in Washington, D.C. Now, these guys are the people who planned the awful, the horrendous NAFTA agreement, which has got to be one of the worst agreements any country has ever signed in the past, that is in Canada's terms, and I'll come back to that if you wish. And they want more of the same, thank you very much, more common policies between Canada and the U.S. in the future. And our press has done an absolutely awful job of reporting this. So you get something so important, and the media just ignores it.
Well, yes, and you know, there has to be a big reason for that. Somebody has told them not to get into that right now, and that's as simple as it is, I guess.
Or is it the fact that the people who own the media are people who would like to see that happen?
Would like to see that happen. Well, there's, I smell a rat somewhere, yes.
Or several.
Several rats. Where do you see Canada moving in terms of its direction? Canada's, as you've already mentioned many times, and we all know, is Canada was really founded in an entirely different way as far as Canadians wanting social programs, and there's a great endearment to our healthcare system and so on. In the United States, the rich people like to call them entitlements. That's a little derogatory, but that's what they like to call them. Do you see Canada, if we're not careful, losing more and more of our social programs?
Jake, it's really interesting. The polls have been consistent as to where the priorities of Canadians lie in terms of what their interest is in terms of the priorities for government spending. At the same time, if you juxtapose those polls with the polls of the Canadian corporate elite, say the people who own, who manage and steer the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, that's Tom DeQuino's group of 150 biggest corporations in Canada. It's really fascinating to watch. There's a direct difference between the two, what the chief executive officers want, the wealthy want, and what the vast majority, let's say 99% of the other Canadians want, and they're totally different priorities. And yet, in the last few decades, it's the wealthy oligopoly who've been getting their way in this country.
They sure have. They sure have. What would you recommend that the average Canadian, what can the average Canadian really do? I highly recommend this book. This book is a must read for people that want to get the details of what's really happened to Canada over the years. And it's a great contribution that you've made here, Mel, to Canada.
Thank you. You want to know what the average person can do? They should read my chapter on democracy in this country and how it is not working properly. But how the heck can it work properly when only 15 to 20% of Canadians have ever belonged to any political party? If you leave it up to the others, the oligopoly that we've been talking about, well, of course you're going to get the results that we've been getting. Canadians have got to learn that they've got to become directly involved in the political process. All right, Jake, I'm going to ask you a question now. We'll just give you a quick test, one quick question. What percentage of adult Canadians made a donation to any political party in the 2006 federal election in Canada?
Well, I'll have to be honest with you. I don't know, but I'm sure it's quite low.
How about under 1%?
Oh, really?
How does that reflect on the way democracy is supposed to work?
So yes.
That chapter on democracy at the back of my book is really important reading, and I hope everybody listening to this show will go out and read it. If they can't afford to buy a copy of the book, go to the library and get a copy.
If you care about the country of Canada that we have and that we all love as Canadians, we must inform ourselves and get involved, like you say, in the political process. Otherwise, the top echelon of people are simply going to take it away from us. And with that, I just want to thank you again, Mel Hertig, for coming on Authors Audio. It's just been a great pleasure.
My great pleasure, Jake. Thank you so much.
Well, you've been listening to Mel Hertig, author Mel Hertig, talking about his latest book, The Truth About Canada. And I want you to go out and get this book. It's just really fantastic. It will open up your eyes. You can get it by going to worldwideweb.authorsaudio.com and click on the photo of Mel's book, and that will direct you to amazon.ca. That's amazon.ca. And you can pick up the book there or at another bookstore if you so choose. This is Jake D. Steele for Authors Audio saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.